For days and weeks now, I've thought of nothing but death. Though I'm normally a late riser, I get up early every morning now, calm and uplifted, after a night of dreamless sleep. I feel all my powers strong and ready within me, as they've not been for a long time. I welcome the day, which brings me once again the thought of death. With every breath I take, the thought penetrates further into my body, down into its most hidden recesses, and fills it entirely. It is death, death that guides my pen. God alone knows what experience laid these thoughts in my brain, like eggs. But there they lay and mature unnoticed, until one day they suddenly hatched out and introduced themselves to my consciousness. Ah, I thought, when the thought of death emerged into my mind for the first time. So there he is. And I welcomed him as one welcomes some old acquaintance who arrives one train later than one had expected. In fact, however, I had not really been waiting for him so desperately. He was early as far as I was concerned, and took me by surprise. Nor did I wish him upon myself. Previously, when I had heard other people talk about their thoughts of death, and there is nothing people like better to talk about than what they call the last things, it used to flash across my mind. And you yourself? What about you and death? Tell us, what is your attitude? At the same time, I was calmly smoking a cigarette and drinking a cup of sweetened tea. I listened to the others talking and felt a sense of well-being, nothing more. I was, no doubt, what they call a benevolent neutral. Death, whether welcome or not, good Lord, I did not know what to do with it. I was still healthy, touch wood. I enjoyed my youth, and I merely hoped that I had not been picked for anything special. All this has changed since I started thinking about death. And I do nothing else but sit here thinking about him. I'm so entirely taken up with thinking about him that if my head were to be cut off now, my stomach or my right knee joint would continue the work of thinking about him, and would, no doubt, bring it to its proper conclusion. How can I tell how the thought got into my head, into me? I do not remember, and would rather leave the threads as they have been tied than start unravelling them. It is as though one were to try to answer the doctor's question, when did you first feel that pain in your arm, to the best of one's ability? I.e., on a Tuesday, I remember it exactly. I was walking across the marketplace and met an acquaintance. He told me that he occasionally experienced a slight piercing sensation in his arm, up there, near the joint. I said rheumatism, perhaps. Who could tell what it really was? As I walked on, I too began to feel from time to time a kind of gentle pulling sensation, up my arm, right to the shoulder. There it was again, as gentle as a mother's experience of the child's first movement in her womb. But no. No one can give such an answer, and whoever tells me he can is an idiot. Or I a fool, were I to believe him. I cannot tell how it happened that death entered into me, but I can say what it was like to feel him there. It was as though a furious pain were disturbing my sleep at night. Only it was not a pain. It was something utterly different, something far more ecstatic than a pain can ever be, that filled me completely. I nearly passed away. Here I must add what exactly this thought of death was that overcame me. It was not the thought of my own death, the death that I would one day, soon or in the far distance, have to die, that gripped me. By all I hold dear, such a foolish thought never entered my head, nor will it, I trust, ever weigh upon me in the future. The thought of my own death leaves me quite cold and unmoved at the present time. I do not believe that any serious person will ever occupy himself for any length of time with the thought of his own death. It's not my affair, he will say. My death is not my affair, and to think about it would mean to diminish the stature of a life, which can be great if one desires it greatly. It would mean circumscribing the limits which one's life must voluntarily accept. A man like myself, and I know, thank God, that I am not the only one, lives and works and takes up his daily task with the thought that everything will continue the same, unbroken and forever, in the name of heaven, until the end of time. It was the thought of my enemy's death which penetrated me and made me shudder as one does on an icy night. The death of my enemy. I think of it with all the joy a thought can have, for those to whom a thought is something vital and alive, the death of my enemy. I think and experience it with all the gravity and sublimity which is due to the thought of an enemy who is worthy of one. At every moment of the day, part of my mind is dedicated to this thought. Apart from the evenings and nights, the proudest moments of the day are those when no other thought occupies me. The death of my enemy. Blessed be the thought of my enemy's death. People say that one should approach one's own death with longing, like a bride approaching the bridegroom. They have always found a strange pleasure in linking the things of death with those of love. One should accustom oneself to death slowly, they say, so as to prove oneself worthy of him. Only he who has learned to do so can claim to have shaped his life fully. But I have seen many who had slowly and painfully accustomed themselves to their own death, and were then destroyed by the death of a friend. I have seen few who were equal to the death of their enemy. Since this thought has taken hold of me, my life has soared towards a goal. Never have I searched for this goal, nor thought that it could have been prepared for me. Ah, how contemptibly I lived, until I understood what a goal there can be for a man on this earth. What do they amount to? All these other goals that people pick out for themselves, in the empty belief that happiness, love, or hatred will lessen the reality of a lifeless body's empty remains. No lie, however noble, can extinguish the conflagration death lets loose in truly festive minds when the moment of truth has arrived. A rushing in the sky, as when a strong ancient tree is cut down, an arrow shot into the glittering blue of winter. My mind is in a festive mood. My enemy is entering the white land of his death. I wish that he, who throughout his life knew that he was my enemy, as I was his, should carry into his hour of death the knowledge that my thought of his death will be worthy of our enmity. I will not relinquish one inch of this enmity. It remains our imperishable possession, even in his last hour on earth. So much do I owe this enmity which filled our life, even at the hour of death. It was a long road that led my enemy to his end. It led from victory to victory. It passed through triumphs, like the path of an immortal. It also led through low valleys, through swamps and morasses, alive with hidden lusts, full of the musty odor of sickness and malice. The life of a mortal, like my own. Today he has suffered his greatest triumph. He is entering the white land of his death. But it took a still longer journey before I, free from all those petty motivations which hatred and revenge eagerly fasten on, could encounter him at the end of his road. Even now, a trace of hatred and revenge burns in my thoughts. I wish I could exterminate even that last trace, the voluptuous roots and branchings of fury and malice. It is I who am sitting here, waiting, and he is walking into his death. Do you hear? He is walking into his death. One cannot cut the lines of experience out of one's face, like the rotten bits in an apple. One has to carry them about in one's face and know that one carries them. One sees them, as in a mirror, every day when one washes oneself. And one cannot cut them out. They belong there. But all the same, it is a festive waiting, full of joy and sorrow and remembrance, and goodbye forever.